भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Canto 4, Chapter 28, Purunjan becomes a woman in the next life, text number 37. Shitoshna, Vata, Varshani, Chutvipase, Priyapriye, Sukadukke, Iti, Dvandvani, Ajayat, Samadarshanaha, Shitoshna Vata Varshani Chutpase Priyapriye Sukaduke Iti Dvandvan Yajayat Samadarshanaha Shitoshna Vata Varshani Chutpase Priyapriye Sukaduke iti dvandvam Yajayat samadarshanaha Shitoshna vata varshani Chutpipase priyapriye Sukaduke iti dvandvam Yajayat samadarshanaha Shitoshna vata varshani Chutpipase priyapriye Sukadike iti dvandvam Yajayat samadarshanaha Shitoshna vata varshani Chutpipase priyapriye Sukaduke iti dvandvan Yajayat samadarshanaha Shitoshna vata varshani Chutpipase priyapriye Sukaduke iti dvandvan Yajayat Ladies? Shitoshna vata varshani Chutpipase priyapriye Sukaduke iti dvandvam Yajayat samadarshanaha Shitoshna vata varshani Chutpipase priyapriye Sukaduke iti dvandvam Yajayat samadarshanaha Shitoshna vata varshani Chutpipase priyapriye Sukaduke iti dvandvam Yajayat samadarshanaha Shita Cold Ushna Heat, vata, wind, varshani, and rainy seasons. Chut, hunger, pipase, and thirst. Priya, pleasant. Apriye, and unpleasant. Sukha, happiness. Dukke, and distress. Iti, thus. Dvandvani, dualities. Ajayat, he conquered. Samadarshanaha, equipoised. Translation, through austerity, King Malayadwaja, in body and mind, gradually became equal to the dualities of cold and heat, happiness and distress, wind and rain, hunger and thirst, the pleasant and the unpleasant. In this way, he conquered all relativities. Please repeat. Through austerity, King Malayadwaja in body and mind gradually became equal to the dualities of cold and heat, happiness and distress, wind and rain, hunger and thirst, the pleasant and the unpleasant. In this way, he conquered all relativities. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Liberation means becoming free from the relativities of the world. Unless one is self-realized, he has to undergo the dual struggle of the relative world. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna advises Arjuna to conquer all relativities through tolerance. Lord Krishna points out that it is the relativities like winter and summer that give us trouble in the material world. In the winter, we do not like taking a bath, but in the summer, we wish to take a bath twice, thrice, or more a day. Thus, Krishna advises us not to be disturbed by such relativities and dualities when they come and go. The common man has to undergo much austerity to become equipoised before dualities. One who becomes agitated by the relativities of life has accepted a relative position and must therefore undergo the austerities prescribed in the Shastras to transcend the material body and put an end to material existence. King Malayadwaja underwent severe austerities by leaving his home, going to Kulachala, taking his bath in the sacred rivers, and eating only vegetables like stems, roots, seeds, flowers, and leaves, avoiding any cooked food or grains. These are very, very austere practices. In this age, it is very difficult to leave home and go to the forest or the Himalayas to adopt the process of austerity. Indeed, it is almost impossible. If one is even advised to give up meat eating, drinking, gambling, and illicit sex, one will fail to do so. What then would a person do if he went to the Himalayas or Kulachala? Kulachala means some mountain. Like Achala means a mountain. There's some sacred mountain here. Such acts of renunciation are not possible in this age. Therefore, Lord Krishna has advised us to accept the Bhakti Yoga process. Bhakti Yoga will automatically liberate a person from the dualities of life. In Bhakti Yoga, Krishna is the center, and Krishna is always transcendental. Thus, in order to transcend dualities, one must always engage in the service of the Lord, as confirmed by Bhagavad Gita 14:26. Mam cha yoga vicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityayatam brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. If one is factually engaged in the service of the Lord, bhakti yoga, he will automatically control his senses, his tongue, and so many other things. Once engaged in the bhakti yoga process with all sincerity, one will have no chance of falling down. Even if one falls down, there is no loss. One's devotional activities may be stunned or choked for the time being, but as soon as there is another chance, the practitioner begins from the point where he left off. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So we're getting a description here of King Malayadwaja's austerities that he's performing. There are quite a few of these descriptions in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Some come to mind, King Prithu, King Rishabdev. Generally, the kings, especially, they undergo great austerities. They're practically inconceivable to us. I remember King Prithu, maybe he's also doing it. He's eating bulbs and roots and fruits and things. And King Prithu was eating the bark off the trees. He was eating the leaves. Sometimes they don't eat at all. They simply breathe, drink some water. It's practically inconceivable for us. When we hear the half-day fast, it's like, oh, my God, can I make it, you know? Is it a half-day or a full-day? Is it a half-day or full-day? You know? So we're quite unsuited in this age to perform these severe austerities. There are a few who can do it. Srila Prabhupada pointed out how when the Kumbh Mela comes, the Nagababas, they come down from the mountains in the Himalayas, and Prabhupada pointed out, he attended one or two of these, and said, they look like they're 50 years old, but they actually could be 200-300 years old. They're practicing these yoga processes by which they slow down the metabolism, they keep their youth, and they're performing these severe austerities. It's cold in January in the Triveni. It's freezing. Sometimes you see pictures of Prabhupada was there with his devotees, and everyone's wrapped up completely tightly. And then to go bathe, in the water at that time. Very difficult. But these Nagababas means no clothes. They're walking around as free as you please. So there are some who can do it, but for the masses of people, it's inconceivable. So what are we supposed to do? Throw in the towel? We can't become yogis. We can't transcend the dualities of this world. No. Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is very important we realize how this works. Like in the sixth chapter, Krishna gives a taste of this austerity. Just like here, to go to a secluded place, place down the special seat, control the mind, control the senses, and practice pranayama. He's giving a little taste of that in the Bhagavad Gita in the sixth chapter, a little summary. And Arjuna, representing, of course, Arjuna was very qualified. He was a personal associate of Krishna. He lived in a previous time, very powerful kshatriya. He was complaining, he doesn't think it can be done. The mind is too powerful. It's just like the wind. A powerful wind comes up, nobody can control it. It's impossible to control. Very obstinate mind. So he more or less said, I don't think I can do it. Krishna encouraged him, said, yes, it can be done with practice. And then Arjuna says, well, what if one fails? In other words, he was more or less pretty pessimistic about himself doing it. What if you fail? He said, well, no loss. In the next birth, if you've advanced someone, you take birth in a yogi family. If you're a little less advanced, you take birth in a wealthy family or a Brahmin family. And Prabhupada makes that point here at the end of the purport, that there's no loss or diminution even in this process. But practically speaking, Krishna agrees with Arjuna. He says, okay, now I'm going to tell you. In chapter 7, he begins, Maya Sakta Mana Pata Yoga Myun. He doesn't give up on yoga. Yoga is right there in the first verse, the first line of the first verse, 7th chapter. But he says, I'm going to teach you now how your mind can naturally be attracted to me. Right? Because the whole thing is to be attracted to Krishna. Krishna is the supreme Brahman. He's transcendental to these modes of nature. If we fix our mind on Krishna, then we'll be detached from the dualities of this material world. So one way of doing it is by this meditative process. But another way of doing it is the way he begins describing in the 7th chapter and going through to the 12th chapter, the process of bhakti yoga. But we should never forget that the same principles still hold. And that is, if we allow ourselves to be attracted by the dualities of this world, then we will suffer. Then we will suffer the threefold miseries. Because wherever there is sukha, there has to be dukkha. It's the two sides of the same coin. Yehi sangs bhajata bhoga dukkha yona evate. If you want to enjoy bhoga in this world, means that enjoyment separate from Krishna, personal sense enjoyment, then you have to take the misery. Because that very enjoyment is the source of your misery. Krishna's statement right in the fifth chapter. So this is a total condemnation of this whole civilization, this so-called civilization, which is founded on this idea of maximizing enjoyment demonically, even to the point of exploiting others, tormenting others, other countries, This is what happens in the 16th chapter. You realize the heart becomes very hard because the whole basis of your existence is simply your own enjoyment. And so gradually, everyone else becomes an object of your exploitation. How can I exploit them to enjoy like that? Just the opposite of Krishna consciousness. Where Krishna consciousness, we're meant to see everyone as Prabhu. Everyone, as we offer obeisances, even as Krishna says in the 11th chapter, to the dogs in the street, at least in your mind, because we see, oh, there's the soul and the super soul. What to speak of? You see the opposite mentality. So these severe austerities were practiced in previous ages especially, because after a long lifetime of enjoyment, the kings especially, they have all opportunity for that. There's these deep tendencies, these what we call conditioning, some scars in the mind, so many habits of enjoyment that need to be burned out. And one of the processes is, well, you leave the environment in which you enjoy. That's the first thing, right? They go to the forest. Forest is always a place of tapasya. Imagine if all of a sudden we had to leave our apartments and our homes and our mobile vehicles, whatever we're living in, and just go into the forest. Or here it would be more appropriate to go into the desert. Just walk a few hundred miles east. Now live. You know? Where's water? Where's shelter? Where's food, right? Immediately we would be in tremendous anxiety. So this is what they would do. They would just cut off all the attachments. Now here, by Darby, his wife, who was Paranjan in a previous life, is going with him. But she's just serving now. There's no question of any contact or any enjoyment. You know, she's serving very humbly. And he's performing these severe austerities in the forest for the purpose of burning out. This is what tapasya, one of the meanings is burning, right? For the process of purification of one's existence. As was pointed out yesterday, I think, this principle of tapasya is spoken of throughout the Bhagavatam and throughout, you know, our literature. Because without tapasya, this austerity, there's no question of even beginning yoga. So even in bhakti yoga, we have our austerities, four regular principles, which Prabhupada says are practically impossible for the ordinary man here. So there are austerities for us. And we know if we're going to be in a temple environment, especially if we live in the temple, then there are certain rules and regulations. You have to do this. You can't do this. There's a whole list. You don't have to walk into the forest and try to live on roots and fruits, but you have to eat only prasadam. You have to get up in the morning. You have to do your duties. You have to chant. You have to do all these things. So these are our austerities. They're not severe austerities, but they are austerities. And so what is the purpose of them all? Well, we find from Rishabhdev in the next canto, in his very first verse, Tapo divyam putra kayena sattvam shudyed. One performs these auspicious austerities because we know that there are also inauspicious austerities. Austerities simply give you power. In this case, they give you the power of detachment, of renunciation and transcending the modes. But there are also demonic austerities, such as Hiranyakashipu performed, or Ravana performed. And then you get power to do your nefarious business. Even the ordinary person knows that. You got to get up early in the morning. You have to get onto the freeway. Great austerity here in L.A. Practically unbearable. Some people can't stand it. They have road rage, right? They're so frustrated trying to move down the road. Or now go into the gas station, $4 a gallon, $4.50 a gallon. You know, I can't afford it. You know, they're so frustrated. This is an austerity just to try to live in this world and move around. So what's the purpose of those austerities? Oh, make money, you know, pay my mortgage, support, you know, this and that. But still, the principle of austerity is there. Those who have given up on that, we see them, the poor people walking on the street. You know, they threw in the towel. Homeless, let me sit down, a little wine, forget, sleep, motor ignorance. But still, even there, there's austerity. You get chased. You have to have austerity in this world. So divya, tapo divyam, this is the key word, sattvam shudye yasman. From that austerity, the existence becomes purified. In other words, your very being, your consciousness, becomes pure. Purified of what? Purified of lust, anger, greed, right? Illusion. All of these things that are impinging on our heart since time immemorial, life after life, they become purified. And you become peaceful. And the key is Brahma Saukyam Tranantam. One comes to the point of being able to enjoy Brahma Sukha, transcendental happiness. As living entities, we are enjoying beings. We are like Krishna in that. Anandamaya Vyasat. We must enjoy somehow. Having forgotten Krishna, we're trying to enjoy these dualities and suffering like anything. These two verses probably would always quote Krishna Bohamukha Boga Krishna Boga Mukha Jiva Boga Vancha Kori Nikatastamaya Tari Japatiya Dhari from the Prema Vivarta. When you turn your face away from Krishna, in other words, you turn your back on Krishna, right? One of the first things you learn as a bhakta or bhakti is don't turn your back on Krishna, right? Prabhupada was very eager that we don't sit right at the back. Because turning one's back on someone is an insult. And also it means you're ignoring them, you're forgetting them. Oh, I'm sorry. We need to get a multi-directional mic in here. Krishna Bohamukha Jeev Boka Vanchakori. Why do you turn your back on Krishna? To enjoy bhoga, with the desire to enjoy bhoga. But then Maya is immediately there. There's no delay. Nikatastamaya, she's right next to you. Nikatastamaya tare japatiya dhare. And this japatiya dhare is just like, you know, tackling on a football field. He grabs you, tackles you, and then covers you up. So there's these two things. There's the Arunatrika and Prekshanatrika. There's a covering and making to suffer, right? Illusioning, bringing you down and covering you over. So we can stay in that position for millions and millions of births. We have been in that position. Only in the human life do we have the chance to turn back to Krishna and get out of the grip of this Maya. And so the other one that is spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, the same idea, is Krishna Buli, ye jeev anadi bahimukha, ate eva maya tare deha sangsara dukkha. So here the idea of forgetting is especially, the word buli means to forget. Krishna buli ye jeev. When the jiva forgets Krishna, Krishna buli ye jeev anadi bahimukha, then he remains turned away from time immemorial, going on for many, many millions of births. Therefore, Maya is giving him so much dukkha, so much misery. So the whole world is trying to minimize the dukkha and maximize the sukha, isn't it? That's what basically material life is all about. Even the insects, the birds, everyone. Somehow everything's going okay, you know, the two birds. Right? You know the famous story of the pigeons Krishna tells in the 11th canto. One of the gurus of this kind of this natural sadhaka. He had so many gurus, and one of his gurus was the pigeons. And so the pigeons, they represent, you know, ordinary family life. So you have the male pigeon and the female pigeon, and there was a tremendous bond of love and affection between these pigeons. And they were leading their pigeon life in the forest, you know. And gradually, you know, and naturally there was the first pregnancy of the pigeon, of the female pigeon, and they were both very happy. And then the pigeon, she gave birth to the eggs, you know, and very carefully kept them warm, you know. And the male pigeon took care of the wife, went and got himself, went to get the worms or whatever they eat, you know. And okay, you know, and then finally the little fledgling peeks out, you know. And every species, there's this. Prabhupada told the story we heard about the monkey. And I heard this yesterday on the tape. How even among the monkeys, there's this tremendous bond of love between the mother monkey and the little baby monkey. And Prabhupada was sitting in his room, working, you know, writing or whatever. And somehow, you know, the monkey was outside, and the little baby monkey got in through a little crack and was now inside the room, and the mother monkey was outside, and she freaked out. She goes nuts, you know. Oh, my God, my little baby is out of my hand now. He's going to be killed, you know. Yelling and screaming and jumping, and I don't know if he's rolling on the ground, but anyway. And Prabhupada described somehow he pushed that little monkey out through that same hole, and then the other, you know, the mother monkey was so relieved. You know. So the mother pigeon is taken care of, and gradually the fledglings, you know. So the male and female pigeon, they went out to forage, just what they do, and they got the little berries and worms, whatever, and they were feeding. So one day they went out, but the hunter came. You know, the cruel hunter comes and he sees the little pigeons there, and he knows that the parents are going to come soon. So the mother comes back first, and he throws the net, and they're trapped in there, and they all die. You know, they're yelling and screaming and squeaking. And suddenly the whole dream of the household life. And then the male pigeon comes and he sees the condition. You know, there's his little children, they just expired, and the wife is still yelling, whatever. And he's just so depressed, you know, he just runs into the net also, and he's finished. And the hunter just goes his way and says, now I'm successful, now I go back home. And this is material life. Things are going on pretty good, you know, everything's pretty much together, you know, and all of a sudden some calamity comes down. Earthquake, you know, China, you know, earthquake here, right? Any minute, any second, you know, we forget. Or some disease comes up, or some financial disaster strikes. Right, or some natural, or the threefold miseries, and oftentimes there's no warning. It's just like your dream is your bubble is popped, you know, the bubble that everything is okay in this material world. So this is the wise, those who are familiar and conversant with Vedic knowledge, even just the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, try to detach and become equipoised So you're not being whipped around from the sukha to the dukkha, to the attempts to counteract the dukkha, the attempts to maximize the sukha and back and forth. That's exactly the opposite of equipoise. So from the beginning we learn, and Prabhupada quotes his first matra sparshas to Kaunteya. Because Arjuna, he wasn't tolerant. He couldn't tolerate the idea of killing his relative, killing his guru, killing Bhishma. He didn't want to be a part of it. You know, he wanted to go off to the forest and withdraw from the responsibility of this horrendous sin, what he saw as a sin. So, of course, the whole Bhagavad Gita is based on the idea that it's not a sin. It's the greatest piety to serve Krishna, even if he says to do something that seems sinful. And in this case, it's killing his relative. So the first thing is the bodily concept of life. You have to rise above that. Now, what does the bodily concept of life mean? It means you're completely absorbed in matrasparshas. Matrasparshas, shita, ushna, sukadukada. The very words are used in this verse. Cold, freezing cold, blazing heat. You know. So in the summertime, the cold is nice. Everyone wants to dive into the ocean or into a nice pool, take a cold shower. In the wintertime, that very same cold water is misery. So it's just depending on the conditions or our state of mind as to how the dualities of this world, how we react to them. So he says that you have to learn to tolerate. You have to tolerate. And this is the first qualification for someone getting liberation. Yam hi navati yante te purusham purusharshaba sama dukkha sukham dhiram so amitatvaya kalpate. If you want to be qualified for amrita, deathlessness, which means liberation, then you have to be able to be equipoised in these dualities. And in order to get to that point, as Prabhupada points out in this purport, one has to practice devotional service. We can't do it by severe austerities, by withdrawing from this world. We have to stay in this world, and this is also our mandate as followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and especially Srila Prabhupada, to stay in the cities, to stay in the heart of Kali Yuga, and to still remain equipoised, and to preach the lessons of Krishna consciousness. Because if we're not equipoised, if we're also being whipped around, then where is our preaching? You see? Prabhupada's great, you know, his great power derived from the fact that he himself was completely equipoised on the transcendental platform, yet he deigned to associate with us. This was his great mercy. His godbrothers, you know, and previous generations, they just stayed in India, or even Vrindavan, you know, maybe write a little something, you know, but not to actually associate and to take the risk of going out in the middle of Kali Yuga dualities. But Srila Prabhupada was every moment completely transcendental. And by that example and by his bhakti shakti, he had so much shakti to instill us with faith in the process by which we can also transcend. So that duality arises from our attraction and repulsion to this world. It's Chadvesha Samotena Dvandva Mohena Bharata. Right in the seventh chapter, that very chapter where he's teaching how one can be attached to Krishna, how they can cultivate the mind to be attracted to Krishna. That very mind, which for so many births has been turned away, can now be turned toward Krishna and develop that attraction. But because of the habituation, the conditioning, we require discipline. We require association of those who are more advanced, who can give us faith and the strength to do that. And that's why Prabhupada took so much effort to build these ashrams, to establish temples and ashrams. Because amongst others who are practicing and those who are a little more advanced, we can glean and gain spiritual strength. This is the whole idea of the association or the society for Krishna consciousness. And once we become a little strong, then we can also give association. And in this way, the family grows and people become saved from this the dualities of delusion. So in this, now, just as a few coming attractions here, we just in a few verses now, we are going to come across a series of verses in which this Vaidarbhi gets association with the super soul. Of course, you have to remember that this whole thing is an allegory. It's being spoken by Narada Muni. And he's now describing to King Pranjanabari what happened to Pranjan in the next life. So in that context, we understand that the Vaidarbhi is bereft. She's about to jump into the fire. You know, once Malayadraja he expires, she burns his body. He's in samadhi. He goes back to Godhead. And then she's, you know, wants to jump. But she gets association of this unknown Brahman. So just, I'm not going to get into that now, but just to let you know, those purports are one of the most important sources for settling this debate that's still going on. Bahushrapu was here. He's dealing with it from San Francisco. About the fall of the jiva. For many of you, this may not be an issue. But you should know that it is an issue outside and that, you know, on the internet. And that some say, no, we can never fall from Vaikuntha. Prabhupada has very explicit statements coming up in a few verses. How we were with Krishna, we were serving Krishna. Somehow or other, we turned away from him, Bahirmukha. And we've been absorbed in Maya for many, many births. So that's one thing that's coming up. So we want to read a little bit about Vrindavan Das Thakur. Before we do, if there's any comments or questions on these few points, how we can also transcend the modes of nature without having to perform these incredibly austere penances and austerities. Hare Krishna. Savas Prabhu.
You know, this issue of the mind, it's always there. How to control the mind and how to distinguish right from wrong, and you know morality.
Right.
But we see that the mind is so fickle that you know even though a person strives for morality, good thoughts, good deeds, you know still there seems to be like an affliction in the sense that the mind just won't give up.
No.
And you can be you know going on very nicely, and then just at a moment's notice, the mind can, you know, go into some kind of a, you know, horrendous mode.
Right.
And, you know, so what is this? I mean, you know, a person's really striving for thinking good.
Right.
You know, they're really making a concerted effort. They're trying to really chant japa very nicely, and they're really giving it all effort. But then the next moment, it's like Maya comes and just wipes all that out.
Well, that's a good question. this is the struggle, isn't it? These japa retreats are good in one sense because they get you to really think about your japa. You know, but sometimes you don't think about it. You know, because it's our main sadhana and we should try to perfect it. And basically, one of the things that came out is that there are so many things that we can do to facilitate good japa. Just focusing on that for a minute, because that's the main way in which we try to control the mind, and which we probably experience every day, how the mind, you know, I like to say has a mind of its own, you know, the mind of its own. And it's always like pulling and going here and there before you know, did I hear that round? Did I hear anything? Let me chant that one over again. So, you know, getting to bed early, getting up early, associating with devotees, not associating with, the things that we hear in the Upadeshamrita, sitting up straight, sit properly. You know, these yoga principles are not wrong. They help us to concentrate the mind, you know. And all of these things, don't eat at night. You know, Prabhupada talks about it. It's right there in the sixth chapter. These are all techniques that anyone can do just out of intelligence. Okay, let me do that, you know. And then you can also you can even read the holy name. Gorkhashodas Babaji did this sometimes, or he taught others to do it. You can print it out, and you can read. You know, you can write. There's all kinds of ways to like bring the mind back. You have to think. But this all has its place, but it has a limit too, because the real essence of the way in which we can be saved from the demonic mind, you know, the mind which is not our friend, our best friend at this moment, you know, as Krishna says in the Gita, is to really meditate on or adopt the principles of the Shikshastika, feeling ourselves as humble as a blade of grass, tolerant as a tree. In other words, to call out, to recognize our position as helpless. We're in this well. You know, it's a nice verse, if you will. I'll give you this because it completely embodies the idea here. In the there's a lot of verses like this is one of them, and that is in the Mukunda Mala Stotra. He prays Andasya me rita viveka mahadanasya chaurai prabho balabit indriya namadehai Mohan Dukubhare Vinipata Tasya Devesh Dehi Kapanasya Karavalambam. So here, as often, you know, the great Acharya, Queen Kulashekar, he's taking the role of a conditioned soul. And he says, my dear Lord, I have been waylaid on the road. And these powerful thieves, my senses, have stolen away my great treasure, my viveka, my sense of discrimination, my intelligence. And they've thrown me down into a deep, dark well of illusion. And now I'm sitting in this well. Mohan dukupagharevi nipatatasya. So what is my position now? What can I do? I can't get out on my own. So he's calling out to the Lord, Devesha, O Lord of the demigods, Krishna, please reach your hand down here and pull me out. And so the idea is that we can't just chant mechanically. We have to put feeling into it. We have to feel like we're desperately calling out to Krishna with every name. And that we're helpless. His mind is, you know, is there, ready to pounce at any moment. This is the nikatastamaya, the moment. As soon as we stop that mood and we start to wander, then all of this conditioning can come up and grab us with some horrible thought and say, where did that come from? Oh, like 40 years ago, you know, something like that. Or something I heard, something like that. So that desperation, that calling, just as Prabhupada said, like a child for his mother, a lost child for his mother, is essential to really get the protection of Krishna consciousness, where those, you know, eventually those thoughts will be fried. You know, those are like seeds. They can be fried and they won't bother you anymore. Just like we've already done. I think most of us are, we're all vegetarians here? Yeah, okay. So like, you know, the very thought of eating meat for a devotee is like horrible, isn't it? I mean, but it doesn't mean that if you walk on the street there, you know, they're very, very smart where they do it with like McDonald's or whatever. They'll pump out the fragrance, so spoiled, the smell, into the street. And then people say, oh, yeah, I'm hungry, right? And they go in because the smell is very powerful. So we have to smell that, you know, we're walking on the street. So those of us who didn't grow up in the movement, you know, I used to eat meat till I was, you know, 24 or so, you know, and I used to be hungry for that. But what happened to that desire? There used to be a strong seed in my heart, right? I mean, a billion serve means that billions of people are hungry for that. And I was one of them. So now, even though I smell it, it doesn't get to the point of actually any desire. Because I immediately think of the cow. I immediately think of, it's just abominable, you know? So the same thing is there, even for, dare I say it, sex life. Yadavadi mamacheta Krishna pada out of Inde. Right in the Gita, Prabhupada quotes this verse twice. How Yamunacharya, who wrote this, the Stotra Ratna, he chants in this way, ever since I've been enjoying ever new mellows at the lotus feet of Nanda Nandana, Krishna, then the very thought of sex life has disgusted me and I spit at it. You know, very advanced platform, but it can be like that just as it's been for meat and for other things that we wouldn't even think of doing anymore. So we should have faith in that. Yes, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
You got me going.
Okay, go.
So let's say there's this devotee who's really trying very sincerely in chanting the japa, and they're really praying to become the most surrendered soul,
right,
to Krishna. You know, why does it appear that the surrendered souls, you know, sometimes they suffer as much, if not more, than the ones that are unsurrendered? Meaning that, you know, you're striving so hard.
Right.
You know, and even amongst devotees, you know, there's those that are really surrendered that will do all kinds of things. Whatever you ask them, they'll do. And they'll take on so much suffering and austerity. But then there seems to be those that are, quote, so-called unsurrendered, that are enjoying life more. You know, they're walking around. They're really enjoying, you know, and the surrendered souls, tears are coming from the eyes. their back is bent over. You know, they've given, you know, 30 years of their life, and nobody even knows what their name is.
Right.
They don't know who they were, and they barely, you know, maybe even know a Gita shloka. But they're the surrendered, Mataji, or the surrendered Prabhu. And, you know, what is that dichotomy here?
Good question, as usual. Well, you know, we don't have to go very far to get examples of that. Of course, we see in our surroundings, but, you know, famous examples from the Shastra. There's Prahlad, the Pandavas, Draupadi, Kunti, you know, they all go through, seem to go through great tests, you know, of their devotion. And yet, of course, they all come out with flying colors. Their faith is never shaken. What is suffering? You know, what is happiness? We're so used to seeing, you know, to measure suffering by the externals. You know, well, this person's riding in a big car, and this person, you know, has so much money, and they have enough food to eat, and they live in a big house, therefore they're not suffering. Actually, we know that if you really think about it, suffering and happiness are mental states. You know, those persons in those big cars and those big houses in Beverly Hills, they're also taking, you know, antidepressants. They can't sleep at night, you know. They're whatever. Their daughter ran off with somebody, you know. That's not the measure of real happiness. And on the other side, so-called suffering, just like this Malyadvaja, if you just look at him, if someone were to just take a snapshot, whoa, this is your ideal? You know, he's so skinny. It says here, Krishi, you know, Krishi. You know, he's eating roots and fruits. Come on, go get him a nice meal in Govinda's or something. You know, what do you do? You're making news. How is this the ideal? I don't want to have any part of that, you know. But inside, where your real consciousness is at, is he's enjoying unlimitedly in relation to Krishna, the six Goswamis. You know, if you look at Raghunath Das and Rupa Goswami, so skinny, no place to live, you know, cold, shivering in the winter. But you know, Gopi Bhavata Sarvatabda Laharika Lola Magno Mohor in that Goswamashtaka, is that they're enjoying it every moment, floating in the waves of Gopi Bhava, the highest ecstasy. So the point is that Krishna takes charge. This is the first thing, is that when we start to approach him, even a little bit, then all bets are off. You can't say, well, this person now is suffering, you know, to do to this karma and so forth. It changes. Krishna, if he has great mercy on you, he'll take away all your wealth. He says it right in the 11th canto. And where is that at? Because he sees there's still the heart is split. And so in order to burn out the last bit of attachment, he takes all your money away, and then your loving wife kicks you out of the house. Right? It's right there in Bhagavatam. You know, it says, you can't support us anymore. We'll ignore you, you know. Okay, let me take sannyas. So that's the point, is that Krishna will, those who are, whose komala shraddha, whose faith is delicate and weak, then he'll give them nice facility, you know, he won't put them through much suffering, everything is sweet and so forth. Those who are getting stronger in their faith, a few more tests. By that burning, they make advancement, and they see, oh, this suffering is actually the greatest happiness because I'm doing it for Krishna. This is the point. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if Krishna puts me in a situation where I have to suffer for his service, that suffering is my greatest happiness. And isn't it true that if you love someone, you prove that love by undergoing some austerity, making some sacrifice for them, then they really know you love them. This is one of the problems of having a lot of money. You don't know who likes you or not. Maybe they just like you for your money. I experienced that with Ambarish, who's a great soul, who's giving so much money. But back in the middle, early 80s, he'd been burned a little bit, you know, and he was a recluse. Who was his friend, you know? Even a devotee like that. I mean, he transcended, came out of it. But the point is, what to speak of a karmi who has a lot of money, a billionaire. Where's my friends? I don't know. Who likes me really just for me, you know? So... But a devotee who undergoes difficulty for Krishna, or he sees himself put into difficulty, then tattenu kampam susamikshamanam. He sees, oh, this is Krishna's mercy. You know, like Sudama Brahman. He's saying, oh, he didn't give me any wealth because he knew it would take my mind away. I still, you know, love Krishna. So the real happiness is inside. And even though someone is bending over, I'll tell a little story, then we have to end. I was in Vrindavan last year. You remember that devotee? What was his name? Who passed away? He'd been cooking for 30 years in the temple. Yeah, a great devotee. He was told by Prabhupada, "You just stay here." He came early on when they opened the Krishna Balaram temple. Prabhupada, "You stay here, and everything will be fine." He never left the compound of the Krishna Balaram temple. He's in Vrindavan. You know, he didn't go to Govardhan, didn't go to the Yamuna. Just stayed there. He cooked all the offerings for years. Every offering. You imagine cooking 8 offerings. And, you know, imagine a nectarian prasadam. I visited him last year. He was ill. He was about to leave his body. But he wasn't that ill. When I visited him, he was there. And just like you say, he was bent over. He was spitting into a bucket, you know. He had all his Mahaprasadam garlands all over the world. You know, he was playing a tape of kirtan in his room and all these pictures of Krishna Balaram, Radhashyama Sundar, you know. And so I said, forget his name, Prabhu, that's your old god brother, Dravida. You know, I never saw him before. I said, Hare Krishna, how you doing? Hare Bol, you need anything? And he looked at me with this blissful smile, you know, nectar smile, you know, ecstatic smile. The body must be giving so much trouble, but he was transcendent. And instead of asking for me anything, he got a little prasadam and gave me prasadam, you know. This is a great devotee. So even though the body was like that, the heart was filled with love for Krishna, and he was still a transcendental. Yeah. Go ahead, Bhavi.
He once told Srila Prabhupada, I have no time to chant japa. I'm doing all this cooking. Prabhupada told him, you don't have to chant japa. Just cook.
That's right.
And chant. He just chanted Hare Krishna while he was cooking.
Yes, he was always singing Hare Krishna and singing songs. Yeah, go ahead. All right, and we do want to read this short thing about Vrindavan. Go ahead, Prabhu. Something? Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that in that same question that Savas had about the mind, on the same topic, it appears that even the mind will never leave you alone, even when you're in the spiritual world. Because at one point, if you just made the wrong choice and you say you want to enjoy just like Krishna.
Yeah, that's it. Boom. That's what we learn from these next few chapters. So we have to always be crying out. All right, a few quick words about Vrindavan Das Thakur. So Vrindavan Das Thakur was the primary biographer of Lord Chaitanya, the first, and others came after him. In her childhood, Narayani Devi, niece of Shiva's Pandit, this is from the Samadhi's book by Manadi Swami, the niece of Shiva's Pandit, Narayani Devi, became mad with love of God upon receiving the mercy of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Later she gave birth to Vrindavan Das, who was the last disciple of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. On his guru's order, he wrote the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And there was a lot of nectar stuff in there about Nityananda Prabhu, whole chapters. It is practically a law among Vaishnava writers like Rupa Goswami, Sanatan, Krishnadas Kaviraj, Vrindavan Das Thakur, to always keep themselves in the background. They never mention anything about their family lineage or personal history. The authors of the best written and most relishable verses collected by Rupa Goswami's Pajavali remain unknown. Sometimes there even says anonymous, sometimes there's a name there, but there's nothing else but the name. You don't know who it is. The Pajavali, there's 300 verses there. During the 16th century, entire books of exceptional transcendental prose and poetry were written by prideless Vaishnavas preferring to remain anonymous. I was just looking at one of them called the Hari Bhakti Kalpa Latika, which was translated by Krishna Krata, anonymous. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur loved it so much that he printed it, and Bhaktisiddhanta kept it in print. But we don't know who wrote it. There's exquisite poetry about the nine processes of devotional service. Basically, he's saying here that we don't know much about Vrindavan Das Thakur, but he quotes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Krishna's Kaviraj shows his supreme homage and gratitude by honoring Vrindavan Das Thakur with the appellation Vyas in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Vrindavan Das Thakur is Lord Nityananda's favorite devotee, and therefore he is the original Vyasadev in describing the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. This is from the Anchalila, the end of the book. Srila Vyasadeva himself told Sri Krishna's pastimes in Bhagavatam and other Puranas, and the same way Vrindavan Das described Chaitanya Leela in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Some other verses Krishna's Kaviraj. Hearing Chaitanya Bhagavat destroys all misfortune. By reading the Chaitanya Bhagavat, one will understand the glories of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and he will attain the highest perfection of knowledge, pure love of Krishna. Okay, so one thing is about Vrindavan Das. You know, you really get to know these devotees by reading their books. Just like Prabhupada said, if you want to know me, read my books. Everything is there. So this Chaitanya Bhagavat, it's there in the Veda base. But one thing is that he wrote this beautiful ashtaka about Lord Nityananda called the Nityananda Ashtaka. And just I will end with a couple of verses from there, in which he describes his devotion for Lord Nityananda. So he says there, Saratchandra Brantim Spudadamalakandim Gajakatim Hari Premon Mattam Dittapatamasatvam Smitamukam Sada gunanetam kadakalita vetram kalibadham bhaje nityanandam bhajanata dukandam nidavadi. So this last line is the refrain. So he says, I eternally worship Lord Nityananda, who is the root of the tree of bhakti. Nityananda is none different from Balaram, who we know is the original guru. So that's why he's the root of that. We can't get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya without the mercy of Lord Nityananda. That means to preach to all the Jagais and Marais. That's the idea. So he says he has this beautiful complexion, just like his face is as beautiful as the full autumn moon. And he has this golden complexion, spudanamullakantim, and he walks very gracefully like an elephant. Elephant is the standard for walking grace. Hari Premon Matam, he's maddened with love of Hari, Krishna. But he is himself the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a beautiful smiling face. Smitamukam. Nitya Nanda. He's eternally blissful. Smitamukam. Sada premon madam padamavadita mandamanasam. So he's always absorbed in this love of Godhead. He carries a stick to chase away the dog of Kali Yuga. You know, Kali Badam, he's knocking, destroying the evils of Kali. So then it says, he approached Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, said, my dear Lord, hey, brother, ninam Kali Kalushanam Kinnabhavata, all these people in Kali Yuga are overwhelmed by the evils of the age. Please create some kind of means by which they can easily approach you. And so then the next verse describes, then what was the means? Well, that was this famous preaching formula. You know, if we just meditate on this formula and fulfill it, we'll go back to Godhead. Bolo Krishna, Bojo Krishna, Koro Krishna, Sika. Everything is there. He says, just chant Sri Krishna's names and worship him with all your heart. Follow his instructions and to others then impart. This is a preaching formula. So this is the verse. So then there's one verse which I'll end here. It says how he executed that order. Yateshtam re bratu kuru hadi hadi dwana manasham. Tato vaksang saram buddhitananadayo mihilagit. Idam bahus potai atati vatayam yak padigraham. Vajay nityanandam vajanata dukandam nirabadi. I worship Lord Nityananda eternally. He is the root of the tree of bhakti. He went to every home in Bengal and raising his hands with great earnestness, he said, please just chant the name of Hari without ceasing, day and night. And in this way, give to me your liberation from birth and death. That is the only alms that I request. Nothing else. Is it? And as he went with Haridas Thakur, we know the story. So this is Lord Chaitanya's, Lord Nityananda's glories. And that's Vrindavan Das Thakur's guru. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hari Hari Bo. She said, no.